Monster Man, Episode 475, Amut and Ashira. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are beginning our journey through Monstrous Compendium Appendix Al-Kadim, looking at the monsters of this Arabian Nights-inspired fantasy world and learning what we can about them. It's our first Al-Kadim episode, and I am excited. And we got a couple of monsters that I think are interesting and maybe setting the tone for what's going to appear in the Al-Kadim appendix. So let's jump right in and start with the Amut. So the Amut are animal hybrid creatures. They look like a cross between a hippopotamus, a lion, and a crocodile, and they consume the souls of the dead, which is the only thing that brings them nourishment. But don't worry, they only consume the souls of the wicked, which does raise the question of why they are neutral evil. I guess consuming souls is a pretty bad thing to do, even if it's like a cosmologically ordained destruction of the souls of the wicked. Like a lot of classic D&D monsters, the Amut can swallow you whole. They also have a deafening roar. And like a lot of monsters, they don't like to be in sunlight or bright light. So if they get exposed to proper sunlight, that can force a morale check. And just bright light, even from like a continual light spell, will give them penalties, which is handy. They live underground, especially in, you know, places where there's lots of dead folks. Tombs, necropoli, necropoles? Anyway, those places. And so on. One detail that I really like about the Amut is that they can eat physical food, but they don't gain any nourishment from it. So they're not really predators, but that doesn't stop them killing people. People that get in their way, you know, or people that threaten them. But they don't eat their kills. They just kind of like toss them around and play with them. And then they abandon them and the predators and the scavengers get at them. Maybe they are evil. But one thing that they do is if they find evil people, and they can detect evil, if they find evil people, they will kill them in order that the evil person's soul or Hama will leave the body, and they can then eat the soul, which they do gain nourishment from. And we're told that the Hama is like a flightless bird, and I believe we're going to see the Hama as a monster later in this book. So in terms of their inspiration, the Amut are clearly based on the figure of Amit the Devourer from Egyptian mythology. Like them, Amit is a hybrid animal, although it's usually depicted with the head of a crocodile rather than the head of a lioness, as here, and its role is to devour the souls of people who have failed this test in the afterlife. So it's basically if hell was an animal. It's what happens to you if you haven't lived a good life, you haven't been, you know, a righteous person and done the things that would make your heart as light as a feather. Now, normally I grumble a little when a monster entry takes a single creature and turns it into a species, but I can sort of see the logic. Because the thing about Amit the Devourer is that it's an incredible idea and it's an incredible looking creature, but it's the kind of mythological figure that will never really come up in a game. You don't encounter it until you're already dead and being judged, and even then, you don't interact with it in any way. It's just a warning of the terrible fate that awaits you if you fail the test. So religiously important to the ancient Egyptians, to be sure, but from a fantasy role-playing perspective, not a whole lot of opportunity there. So this takes the concept and turns it into something that you could actually do something with, I suppose, although it doesn't give you much to work with. I guess the thing is that they are dangerous animals that hang around, essentially dungeons. There is something a little boring about taking the idea of divine judgment and turning it into yet another predator-prey relationship. So I'm not saying it's perfect, but I do like the fact that they hang out specifically in the kinds of places that D&D adventuring parties like to frequent, right? Areas where large numbers of dead evil people can be found, so your various lost cities of ancient wizards and ancient necropolises and so on are all in there. I assume, incidentally, again, I haven't read the Land of Fate box set, but I assume that there is an equivalent to Irem of the Many Columns in Al-Kadim. If there isn't, there should be. You can also hear the roaring of the Amut a long way off. So that roaring is actually evidence that you are near such a place. So if you're a bunch of tomb robbers or you're looking for some ancient relic that might have been buried with some past king or warlord, you know, there's something there, I suppose. Now, I do think there's a couple of changes that we could make. First and most importantly, they've got to have the crocodile heads back. These lion heads are doing them no favors. Also, I think it would be fine to retain the mythological Amit as well and just say that these are either, you know, they're fragments of her essence that manifested on the material stroke ethereal plane, or that this species of creature does a bang up job eating evil souls, and so then like their queen became the divine soul eater. Although the role of a soul eater and like a tense judgment to determine whether you were good or evil in life is kind of knocked out by the fact that, you know, these creatures have detect alignment and know whether you're evil or what, right? So the Amut are okay. They interact with alignment, which I think is probably nobody's favorite AD&D system, but I do like the way that they sort of mix a spiritual concept and a mundane physical danger, like they are large, dangerous animals, which kind of reinforces the idea that the spiritual world is not far from the physical one, which is something that I like. Okay, next up we have the Ashira. The Ashira? They are a little less exciting than the Amut, but they're still perfectly fine. These are basically your dryads or nymphs. They are ladies that are also trees. Like their Euro fantasy counterparts, they're good-natured and generally friendly. They're described as, you know, hanging out, doing each other's hair, dancing and singing. I mean, just generally having a good time and enjoying life. They abhor violence. They'll even care for people who threaten them. So, for example, if they win a fight, they nurse the defeated foe back to health, and then they release them somewhere far away from where the Ashira live, which is pretty funny. The thing that distinguishes the Ashira from your, like, regular dryads is that they're the spirits not of individual trees, but of orchards as a whole. So, if you recall, in AD&D, dryads have a home tree, a tree that, like, their spirit is attached to, or which kind of is them, but that's not true for the Ashira. Any tree in the orchard will do, and they can travel between them easily. We're told that they can inhabit date and coconut palms, as well as banana, orange, lemon, plum, fig, and pomegranate trees, which is a nice little bit of kind of scene setting in the monster description. Now, I couldn't find the specific name for this creature in my research. Like, I didn't come across a story that said, oh, this is an Ashira. Maybe that term got translated. Maybe it's based on the idea of Ashira, the kind of pre-Judaic deity whose symbol was sometimes a tree. I don't know. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but I didn't run into it. There definitely are folk tales about talking or singing trees, such as the singing tree that appears in the Tale of the Three Sisters in the Arabian Nights, which, by the way, is not a helpful name for the tale. Folklorists, like a third of folk tales by volume, are about three sisters. So I wonder if what we're seeing here is an attempt to take a stock D&D monster and adapt it to a particular culture, which I gotta say, I think works all right in this context, largely because I like an orchard in a medieval Islamic setting. It's one of those things that really sets the scene for me. Like, as soon as they mentioned lemon trees, you know, immediately I start thinking about Arab Sicily, for instance. You know, tree cultivation is a big deal in the agriculture of the medieval Islamic world. This is a period that is sometimes called the Arab Agricultural Revolution or the Islamic Agricultural Revolution, although recently historians have begun to debate the extent to which it's really a revolution or the extent to which is merely, you know, well, quote-unquote merely, but the extent to which it's based on and continues agricultural traditions that were present in the late antique world. Was late antique slash early medieval agriculture maybe a little bit more sophisticated than we tend to think? But anyway, kind of the 8th to 13th centuries is a period where there are lots of texts being published about agriculture, about things like grafting trees. There's an example in Seville, this is quite late in the period, I think, of the Sultan consulting with a particular peasant to discover the techniques that he uses to grow his prize-winning melons. And of course, this is in some ways a demonstration of status as well, because in many parts of the Middle East and North Africa, having, and Al-Andalus for that matter, having orchards like this would be dependent upon having complex irrigation systems. And those systems certainly existed. They go by different names. The Sicilian ones are called kanats, which I think is actually a Persian word. It may reflect the fact that the engineers who built them were actually Persian. But, you know, these kinds of big infrastructure projects are traditionally a way for rulers and states to demonstrate their wealth and organization. Anyway, love an orchard. You can definitely imagine some poet, there are magic poets in this setting, which I think is also fair enough, hanging out in the orchard, practicing their verses on the orchard nymphs. You can definitely imagine conspirators or thieves, you know, hiding among the trees of the orchards by the light of the moon, and some old caretaker with a lamp going around looking for him. The usher befriend the caretakers, and they're often, the caretaker will be like sort of the old NPC who tells you that there are nymphs in the orchard, like, oh, but these city folk don't believe me, or whatever. I guess the main question in game terms is, what do you do with these monsters? Because they're not hostile. They tend to flee or use charm person rather than fight, but they don't even usually do that because they're friendly and nice. I guess you could do a bit where the Asherah witnessed something and you had to use charm or diplomacy to find out the truth. You know, maybe the caretaker gets murdered or something. Or maybe they saw something like the conspirators meeting in the orchard by the light of the moon, and because they're tree ladies who don't go outside the orchard, they might not even understand the significance of the rendezvous between the conspirators, which is always a fun bit where an NPC gives you a clue, but only the PCs understand why the clue is important. That's pretty cool. Is there a series of mystery novels set in medieval Sicily? Because if they're even halfway good, I will read at least one. The Asherah, I suppose, could also like entreat you to defend their orchard. An orchard is a pretty good defensive scenario, actually, right? Because it's a very valuable asset. It's not like you can replace a mature fruit-producing tree overnight. And it has a pretty interesting tactical landscape. It's full of trees that you can use for cover or height, might have walls, could be attached to another garden or a residence. So if like marauders are coming to attack this town, you might have to defend the orchard. It's kind of cool. Or the Asherah could start complaining if their irrigation canal dried up and you would have to like go out into the desert to find the spot where the canal has been blocked. And of course, that's because some monster has done something or other. So, okay, there's something there, I suppose. Asherah are fine, especially because they're associated with orchards and medieval Islamic orchards are very cool. All right, that's about all the Hollywood Arabian monsters we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be taking a look at some beings from Zoroastrian legend and a living storm. Well, I don't know if it's living, but you know, we'll find out together next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.